back. Hey, welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. We took a couple of weeks off during the holidays, and we're back now with your publisher, Kevin Longquist.
How are you, sir? Good to be with you all again.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I assume our return is timed around what seems like an important game for Baylor coming up. I think it's important.
Kind of.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, I'm ready to talk about that and everything else that involves, but it's good to be back.
Okay, I'm going to start out with something that will get you all ranting. What is your initial reaction to the playoff rankings? Kevin?
I thought they stunk, and I was really disappointed by the fact that Baylor didn't move up. I think I'm more shocked the fact that TCU moved up to 3 and Florida State dropped. I mean, everyone knew that everyone was going to move up because Mississippi State lost at Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. So that's – but to see TCU – move up to 3 and have Baylor and TCU separated by 3 spots really just doesn't make any sense to me. I even have more of an issue really with Florida State dropping to 4. I really do not understand on a week-to-week basis what the criteria is for the committee and what they're telling us. And then when Jeff Long, the chairman of the committee, comes out and says, well, we just think that TCU is a better team, is he really going to be saying that, though, Sunday afternoon at 12:45 Eastern when the rankings are come out? If Baylor were to have beaten Kansas State, TCU were to have taken care of business, is the committee really going to turn around and jump Baylor over TCU? I mean, obviously a couple things have to happen for Baylor to jump. They're going to need Georgia Tech to beat Florida State, or more than likely Wisconsin knocking off Ohio State. But at the end of the day, is anyone really going to say that? I have a hard time really believing that. Jake?
Yeah. Well, I'll get to my initial reaction, then kind of we'll discuss what has to happen. But there's so much craziness in this world, so much on TV, whatever, that it's hard to be shocked these days. But when TCU flashed up at number 3 right after the show, the first two on TV on Tuesday night, I literally jaw dropped and I kind of gasped because it was pretty stunning. And this committee has had some really strange rankings, but this one stunned me even more. And it has less to do with TCU and more to do with what you said about Florida State. I mean, you know, if I'd hate to see I mean, they haven't lost since 2012, right? Have they been blowout wins? Not at all, but you got to reward a team for it that just keeps winning. It's hard to go undefeated. It's hard to do it in back-to-back years. They're doing that. I don't think enough credit is being given to them for just winning. I mean, how many of these games could they have lost if they found a way to win? That's the, you know, it's just not being rewarded fairly. So those two rankings were the most curious of all. I mean, there's other ones in there. I don't know how they drop. It's so funny, the political football that Minnesota is. You know, they move up, they lose, and they don't drop out. Yet how do they they didn't have a bad loss against Wisconsin, and they drop out completely from 17 to unranked. I mean, they went from 25 to 25 after a loss, yet they go from 17 to unranked after a loss. It's just there's just way too many inaccuracies with their ranking from week to week that if someone with smarter than me and more time put a chart together, it just show the logic doesn't add up. My final thing, I don't want to talk too long. My final thing is I'm starting to wonder if Jeff Long disagrees with these rankings. And the reason I say that is you get him up there answering questions and he's talking in circles. Sometimes he really is not making sense. I'm kind of wondering if it's like a defense attorney who has defending a serial killer who everybody in the world knows. he killed 20 people. The defense attorney is basically having to pretend that his client is innocent, right? He's having to fake it. I think Jeff Long, I'm starting to think he's faking it. I'm starting to think that there are people behind the scenes doing all this maneuvering, and Jeff Long happens to be the mouthpiece, and he's the one looking bad. I'm starting to think that he doesn't believe in these two. And it would make sense because a lot of the people don't believe him in either. There's been a huge media backlash, so I'm happy to see that. That was a long answer to initial reaction, Stephen, but there you have it.
Okay, from the Baylor Homer eyes, I'm going to say that what this is a direct statement to Baylor, schedule stronger out of conference. If Baylor had scheduled even a bad P5 team, you know, Vanderbilt, you know, somebody like that, there's no way that they're not moving up. But this is, I think, a message as much as anything else. And I've heard some people talking about Ohio State possibly dropping because their quarterback broke his ankle. And now you're getting into some really, really rotten ways to pick playoff teams when you're talking about somebody getting injured.
You know, Stephen, my retort to penalizing Baylor is, one, I think it's singling out Baylor because Mississippi State's non-conference schedule was frankly worse because they have four chances to play non-conference games, and yet theirs was terrible. You know, same with Ole Miss, too. Boise State might maybe be the exception. But I look at Florida State. They scheduled Oklahoma State and Florida in non-conference play. That's two Power 5 teams, two traditionally really good Power 5 teams. It's not their fault that they're bad, and it's also not their fault that the ACC is bad. So I think Baylor is being singled out for this non-conference schedule. And again, to show the poor logic of this committee, okay, if you do play a good non-conference schedule like Florida State did, they're not being rewarded for that. Again, just more inaccuracies with how they've selected things. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think Baylor is just being totally singled out for that.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I heard Bill Hancock this afternoon, who also is one of the mouthpieces for the committee along with Jeff Long. And, of course, if people don't know Bill, he was the one who was the mastermind for the BCS, which, by the way this thing is going, everyone might hearken back to the BCS and want it to please to return. But nonetheless, I think he said, he goes, look, no one is in the playoffs yet. He made that point very, very clear this afternoon. Now, I'm just telling you what he said. You can react to it accordingly. But he goes, no one is in the playoffs yet. He goes, a lot can happen. We're looking at this on a week-to-week basis. And then whatever happens at the end of Saturday night, then we'll go from there. Okay, yeah. I can take him at face value. But are you really going to sit there and tell me that if Baylor were to beat Kansas State 45-13, TCU does the same basically to Iowa State? Regardless of what happens, do you really think that Baylor would have any shot of overtaking TCU if Florida State were to hold serve? I have a hard time believing that.
There is precedent, though. I mean, I mentioned Minnesota, how you can go from – they're not afraid of jumping teams significantly in this. So I think there's a lot being made about – you know, how can Baylor jump three spots? Well, I mean, Ole Miss has jumped like as many as 10 spots once. It's happened a lot. Now, obviously, you're at the top. There are fewer spots to jump, but I think everybody, including Baylor, everyone ahead of Baylor and Baylor can win, and I don't think it's unreasonable to think Baylor could jump TCU. I don't at all. What happens there, though, my theory on the site that I wrote about on sickhamsports.com is, this has been a not a nightmare for the committee, but something they've been had to answer for what, 4 or 5 weeks now. The way they can solve it, I really could see this happening, is if they have Alabama 1, Oregon 2, Florida State 3, Florida State gets a jump with a win over Georgia Tech, and Ohio State 4. If Ohio State beats a good Wisconsin team, I could see them using that, rationalizing that to move them to 4. Then they jump Baylor to TCU, but by that point, it doesn't matter. Baylor's 5, TCU 6.
Yeah.
I think that's a I don't know. I'm starting to see it as a probable scenario.
I'm right there with you. I even tweeted that out this afternoon, Jake.
They solved their problem. Baylor's at TCU like everyone's been clamming for. And when I say everyone, I'm not talking about Baylor fans. I'm talking about a lot of people in the media.
I think Bill Hancock even said that the most highly debated subject – in the committee room for the last 3-4 weeks has been Baylor TCU. It really has been.
Yeah.
So how do you get out of your most?
That's an easy out.
And how do you get out of that? You put the Buckeyes, who are at number 5. They beat Wisconsin, who is what? Wisconsin's in the teens or wherever they're at right now. I forgot where they are.
Wisconsin is 13.
Okay, Wisconsin is 13. So you have number 5 beating number 13. And even though Baylor is going to be playing number 9, I think it's in Kansas State 9 or whatever it is.
Yes, 9.
Number 9. So you got Baylor over. You got number 6 beating number 9. you're still going to have 5 over 13. TCU will be playing a 2-9 team. Kind of sets up, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I the more I think about it, the more I think this happens. Because basically putting Baylor over at TCU admits that they've been wrong. And, you know, these are men with egos. I don't think they do that. But if they did it by putting 1 at 5 and 1 at 6, Baylor at 5, TCU 6, again, it's just it solves their quandary. And, you know, oh, look, we put them ahead. See, we honor head-to-head. Well, it doesn't matter now because
who cares
at the point where they're ranked, because if they're not in the final – if one of them's not in the final four, then really it's not even worth discussing. It's you know, I think that happens. I also, you know, on the flip side, I think one of Florida State and Ohio State will lose. I think it's a high probability that one of those teams lose for various reasons. Georgia Tech's a tough matchup, and, you know, if Baylor were starting Chris Johnson on Saturday against Kansas State, how hopeful would you be? And that's what Ohio State, they're starting their third-string quarterback for the first time this year, so very difficult spot, so.
Now, I'm going to say this. If Baylor were to jump, if TCU were to win and Baylor were to end up jumping TCU, getting into the Final Four, and TCU doesn't, Kevin, you're buying me a ticket to go to Gary Patterson's press conference because I want to hear it.
Well, it's not far from Waco. You can get there, and I might join you.
I think the funny thing is about, with, you know, it's funny because, you know, Gary on the Big 12 coaches call this week said a loss is a loss, and it doesn't really matter to who, or you kind of minimize it. And I'm like, and that's what he has to say from his perspective, that you kind of have to downplay your head-to-head loss to whoever, especially if you're heading the poll. So even though he's saying that he's not politicking and he's definitely politicking. Whenever anyone says, I'm not going to politic and tell them how to do their job, that's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, and something along those lines, Kevin, is, you know, Art Briles, I obviously have a lot of respect for him based just off of press conferences much more than I do for Patterson. But anyway, I'll just leave it at that. But I think Briles, if they beat Kansas State, he's got all of Saturday night. He needs to go on the offensive, and it might be out of character for him. He's not the type of guy who he lets, you know, things on the field talk, and he's not usually one to politic, but I think he has no choice. I think if Baylor beats Kansas State, even if it's by a single point, I don't care what the margin is. If Baylor wins and is 11-1, co-champs and has the tiebreaker with the other team they're tied with, he's got to make some statements.
Yeah.
He's got to. And I don't think it's going to harm Baylor. He's saying what any coach would say, and I kind of think he has been holding back on trying to politic, knowing that whatever he says won't matter if Baylor loses. But should they win, he needs to make some statements, and I really believe that he will.
The thing I was just going to say is that if they handle Kansas State fairly easily on Saturday, then I could see whoever is talking to him from ABC or for ESPN, he will go into his he will be making his elevator speech on that platform right there. So.
What were you going to say, Stephen?
Oh, just that if Baylor beats Kansas State, they will have more wins over ranked teams than TCU does, because neither one of them played a team that's currently ranked out of conference.
Yeah, very true. And Minnesota's not going to get back in being idle, so
you know,
most of the nation being idle.
Let me just go back. Let me just digress for a minute. Jake, you made the great point about how much they've jumped and how Minnesota fell out. You know, the funny thing about that Minnesota-Wisconsin game is the fact that they came into that game 18, Wisconsin was 14. That was a four-point game in the middle of the fourth quarter when Wisconsin
had
a touchdown late to make it 34-24. And that was on the road in Madison, and they fell out for that?
That was just a shocking.
I looked at that and I'm like, are you kidding me? They fell out because they lost a 10-point game on the road?
I mean, this is a Minnesota.
Now, I'll say this. Having said that, I do think that Minnesota's quarterback is really, really, really a killer for his team in a lot of respects. So maybe they looked at that and said, that's not a top 25 team with a quarterback as bad as what Minnesota has. I don't know. But then if that was the case, why did they move him up when he was kind of as bad at Lincoln the week before, even though they won? I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't. They consistently had Minnesota ranked as many as 30 to 40 spots higher than what computers had them ranked. Mm-hmm. They were not a good team according to computers. Right. So, you know, they had been overranked from that regard. So all, suddenly they just dismissed them. I mean, again, you can point to 10 instances really each week of like head-scratching moves by this committee. Yeah. And the last thing I'm going to say about head-scratching moves, the point of this committee is to basically solve where computers fail us. And I read a good story on Grantland.com. I think it was 2000 when Miami beat Florida State. Both ended up 11-1, but the computers had Florida State ahead of Miami, even though Miami had the head-to-head victory.
Right.
And they, it was a travesty. Florida State lost to Oklahoma in the national championship. I think they scored a safety, and that was it. And basically, they said that was, of all the terrible things that happened in the BCS, that was probably the worst. Right. Miami should have been there, and I think Miami ended up winning it next year. They were loaded.
Right.
The point was is the committee was brought in to rectify those kind of errors. Maybe the computers do have TCU ahead of Baylor. The fact is, if both are at 11-1, that's where a human insight has to come in and make that change, and that's the purpose of this committee. And it's even in their rules that they literally say polls fail us, and so we have to come in, and if there's a head-to-head matchup of equal teams, we have to reward the victor. So, they're not doing what their stated purpose is. We can talk till we're blue in the face, but there are just so many instances, especially with Baylor, where they are failing at their duties.
Okay, real quick, we got 3 minutes left in this segment. What has to happen for Baylor to get in the playoffs? I'm going to jump in and say that either Arizona and Missouri and Georgia Tech and Wisconsin have to win, or there's going to have to be some home cooking on the part of the officials. And, of course, Baylor has to win. But I think at this point in time, somebody's got to lose for Baylor to get in. Kevin?
Obviously, I think Baylor has to win in convincing fashion, like three scores minimum. And I think the suggestion of Arizona over Oregon, or I think you need two of the four to happen, Arizona over Oregon, Wisconsin over Ohio State, Georgia Tech over Florida State, and those, which one am I missing here? I think I got them right. I got Wisconsin over Ohio State. Those types of things, and maybe TCU kind of have a somewhat meh performance against Iowa State, which is completely unlikely. And maybe Missouri over Alabama, but I'm really not even counting on the Tigers to do that, so I don't even kind of acknowledge that. So something of that combination has to happen for Baylor to get picked. But I'm still kind of like with Jake. I just have this certain feeling that regardless of what happens, as long as Ohio State takes care of business against Wisconsin on Saturday night, I think that's your fourth playoff team, provided Florida State does its job against Georgia Tech.
Yeah, my thought is, like y'all said, I think if Baylor blows out Kansas State, they have a good shot no matter what happens. That would be a pretty huge statement on the last weekend of the season to really just pound a very good team.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think this is going to be a close game. I think Baylor wins, but I think it's going to be very tight. So if that is the case, if Baylor wins a close one, I think they have to have both Florida State and Ohio State.
I think what's really the shame here, too, and the last point I'll leave here, the shame of it all is the fact that if Baylor's being punished for the 48-46 victory over Tech, I can see the criticism because they gave up over 700 yards, they lost Bryce Petty, and they saw their 42-17 lead dwindle down to the defense making a two-point stop, or stop on a would-be tying two-point play in order to hold on and win the game. I get that. I don't know. But I also am confused by, too, the inconsistency of how TCU didn't get punished hard enough for its lackluster performance at Kansas when they trailed for most of that game and had to score late in the third quarter on a punt return in order to hang on and win that game. Yeah. And then again, it's week to week, we're just kind of figuring it out as we go along here.
Yeah. Okay. Bottom line, Baylor has to win, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay, and when we come back, let's talk about the Purple Wizard and those Kansas State Wildcats. and we will talk to you after the break.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports is Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast, and let's bring out the hospital cart. Injuries, Petty, Armstead,
Chapin.
Running back, Chapin, yes. And, okay, Kevin, what's your read on how these injuries will affect Baylor?
Well, it looks like everything is in a, moving in a, the right direction for Bryce Petty with the slight concussion that he suffered against Tech. There were pictures tweeted of him on Tuesday that he was going to go out to practice and go through whatever. I don't even know if we obviously are cut off for practice after the first 15 minutes, but yeah. If he was actually dressed and ready to go, then that's a really good sign. Obviously, they're not going to have Devin Chapin, probably not until whatever postseason situation that they're in because of the dislocated elbow. KD Cannon had a bit of a hip issue. He played through it. I would think that he would be available for a Saturday against Kansas State. Trevon Armstead, who also had concussion symptoms, just don't know about him yet. That might be a game time decision with him.
Yeah,
Jake, your read.
I'm going to say this first of all, that I know there are pictures of Petty walking out to the practice field, and it appeared he had pads on. I don't think that is a definite indicator that he will play.
Exactly.
It won't surprise me if he's not available, because a concussion is a serious thing, and rightfully so, teams are treating it with a much more serious nature than they had in the past. And there are rules in place or protocol in place, and if he doesn't pass the test, he's not going to play. And the tests that they give him during the week are not what they give him on the sideline. They're even more involved, and they're more specific. So I'm not counting him in yet until I hear Art Briles say he's definitely playing. And he might not even say that, because he doesn't have to. That's not how college works. Coaches aren't they're not responsible for updating injuries. And why not make Kansas State guess a little, you know? So, but I'm not sold on him being back just yet. Until I hear something official.
Well, I interviewed him after the game. I don't know if y'all listened to that. I put it up. But
yeah.
You could tell he was not the usual Bryce Petty. He told me he was not completely out. He said he was still having a headache. So that's not something that you play around with. Look,
yeah.
I know. Hey, Bryce Petty wants to close this season out, and I understand it, and I know he wants to. But if he's got a concussion and he's still got symptoms, he does not need to play.
I agree. I think if he were even just 5 years ago, he would play no matter what. But really, in the last few years, there's definitely been greater awareness of the ramifications of playing with multiple concussions and playing when you are still experiencing symptoms. What's that?
It's not his choice either.
No, it's not his choice, exactly. But
it's Baylor's choice. It's actually the medical staff's choice, and so
it is. I'm saying 5 years ago, they took that lightly, they're not doing it now. And again, it's a good thing. Look, if you're a fan, you want him to play, but you got to think this is a 22-year-old kid. You can't have him his life impacted. No game is worth that for his long-term health. So. You hope he's well, but you don't play him if he's not.
Yeah. Now, Seth Russell, man, it was not as good when Seth got in there. Baylor was not performing. So I think that takes that game from being something that Baylor can win, that Baylor should win. I think it takes it to something that becomes a much more iffy proposition that he can't play.
If Russell plays, you wonder if K-State might be the favorite in that game, at least from a Vegas perspective. I will say this, if Russell plays and Baylor wins, it's a bigger statement than if Petty were to play and win. I mean, if you win with your backup quarterback, that would impress a lot of people. As far as the other injuries, losing Devin Chapin to a really disgusting elbow injury. If you saw the replay, it was nasty. That hurts, but I think Petty's injury is the only one that really could have an effect on the outcome of the game, whether he plays or not. The others, you know, Cannon is great, but Baylor's deep at receiver. Armstead is a freak for his size, but Baylor's played a lot with Jordan Furbacher and Gus Penning. And you got Johnny Jefferson and Shaq Linwood who can go at running back with Chapin out. So I think Petty is the only injury that's this truly significant and one that will impact the outcome of the game.
Okay, now with College Game Day coming into town, we've got all this stuff. We got the possible, getting into there. Are they going to the Cotton Bowl? Are they going to, you know, the Valero Alamo Bowl? Are they going to the college playoffs? Distractions for this team, because, you know, Baylor has proven it's distractible.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad you said that, because you got to wonder if they've been distracted these past 2 weeks. These are two teams that they should have beat by, you know, at least four touchdowns each, mm-hmm. because Oklahoma State and Tech are inferior teams right now. Mm-hmm. So, I think they can be distracted. I also think they were playing with a lot of pressure, feeling like they had to blow out those teams, and not just going out there and play their game. So I don't think they're going to feel that pressure anymore, because there's only one game left and they just need to win. But I do think there is a chance of distraction. Kevin?
I think the one thing with Baylor is that this is just – I think it's just so different than what they went through last year, because last year was one of those, you know, they came out of nowhere, if you will, and won the conference championship. When they got the break on the last day of the season when Oklahoma State lost right before they kicked off against Texas last year, I think they didn't really have time to react. They just had to go out and play. Now with everything, but as a season that's become the hunted, I think they have reacted okay to the new level of expectations that are thrust upon them. They haven't been the best, and I think the way that they perform, and the frustrating thing about the last 2 weeks, Jake, not only did they struggle, they've struggled against true freshman quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's the thing with Mason Rudolph that is really disturbing about this is the fact that Oklahoma State had to burn his redshirt for that game, and he got reps during the course of the season, but the heavy amount of reps that he got probably didn't start to pick up until perhaps 2 weeks before that game.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the thing that we can criticize Baylor. Maybe that's what the committee is looking at too, is why is this team struggling against freshman quarterbacks? We might be answering our own question here and stumbling upon our own answer here because of what the ills are with this team. And now they're going to get a senior in Jake Waters on Saturday night, but I think that the way that they've kind of handled it and not done so well, especially when Pat Mahomes throws for six football fields, that's not good either. I mean, Mahomes is a pretty good, talented kid, and he came in January of earlier this year. I get all that. That's fine. You still shouldn't be allowing over 600 yards passing. I don't care if he's a freshman or he's a senior quarterback. You just can't.
I agree, and I don't think that's distraction at all. You know, maybe it is. Maybe they're just not prepared. Maybe they, just didn't properly respect what they were going to see from these guys. Maybe that's it. Maybe they went into it thinking they had each of these games already won. I don't know. I think there are a few things, but I just know that if the Baylor we saw in Norman showed up the last two games, neither Oklahoma State or Texas Tech were as close as they end up being.
Well, I thought Baylor, what happened was Tech went into this game saying, hey, man, this is it. This is our last time to make an impression. We got,
it was a ball game. Got
everything going on. You know what's funny here going on? Baylor was in here going, all right, after Tech, we got K-State for the title. And it almost turned around and bit them. And it didn't, but it almost did. And,
you know,
also, let me throw out one other thing. Bennett's defenses play the K-State kind of offense really well. You would think they would be better against that hurry-up read option, because they see it in practice every day. But read option offenses give Baylor's defense a lot of trouble.
Well, first of all, Kansas State, they're not the same offense this year. They throw it much more. They average nearly 100 more passing yards per game. But, you know, I thought there is a point of irony. You know, you go back to last year, Baylor goes to Fort Worth. They're playing a 4-7 team, the 4-7 team's last game of the year. This team is making it their bowl game. Baylor goes in there and pulls out, what, was it 3-point victory? 4-point victory?
An interception with less than 30 seconds left, and so, they were in position to put it in overtime if they just didn't throw an interception.
So you look at this year. You know, what, the next week Baylor goes back to Waco and gets a convincing win for the Big 12 title. Exact same scenario this year. You got to see the parallel. Not away from Waco, playing a 4-7 team, an in-state rival, a team that's making it their bowl game. You know, Stephen, you were right. You know, there was no pressure on Tech. They just went, look at what they did. I mean, how many teams have all those fakes, kick an onside kick, you know, just cutting loose? They didn't care, you know, they did not worry about turnovers, anything. They didn't worry about making mistakes. They were there. I mean, you look at the way they played on defense, late hits out of bounds, stuff like that. They left it all out on the field, and dang, they nearly got the win. That was a tougher team to play than I think Baylor's getting credit for. Now, Baylor should have beat them handily, but still, it's a tough situation to be in where you're supposed to be perfect. Baylor had to be perfect in the eyes of the committee, whereas Texas Tech could just screw around and do whatever the hell they wanted. You know, now you have the same thing. Barely beat a 4-7 in-state rival away from Waco. Now you're coming back home. I think the pressure is mostly off. They just need to go out and play. So you got a chance to go back to Waco, beat a team, and win another Big 12 championship. You know, it's eerily similar to last year.
It really is, and it is eerily similar. I think that one of the things you also have to remember is that Baylor's leading 42-17 when Petty goes out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they hung on and they were able to make it. But hey, you know what? Those guys weren't bad. You know, I was down in that sideline and those guys were chunking that ball deep. Like you said, Jake, about the onside kick, the fake punts, all that kind of stuff. You can't make a season off that, but you can start one game off of it.
Yeah, and Kansas State's not going to do that. If Baylor stops Kansas State on 3rd and 5, they're not fake punting it. They're not kicking onside kicks after they score. It was kind of a fluke matchup, and you're right. You can't make a season like that. If you do, and you go 4-8, you're going to get fired because it's so unconventional. But let's move on. Let's actually talk about Kansas State. What do we have next?
Jake, where do you see Kansas State having advantages over Baylor? And I'm going to take a wild guess. You're going to start with the defensive secondary.
That's not such a wild guess, Stephen. You're dead on. I think if I look at these two teams stacked up, I think most of the position matchups are either a Baylor advantage or a push. I think Baylor's kind of a better team overall, except when it comes to their receivers against Baylor's defensive backs. It's a really terrible matchup for Baylor. Huge advantage for Kansas State. The only light I see in that tunnel with this matchup is that Kansas State has an awesome receiver in Tyler Lockett. You know, arguably the best, if not second or third in the Big 12. After that, they have a great slot receiver, Curry Sexton. He's nearly at 1,000 yards. He's a tough matchup at the slot, and we saw what Baylor does with slot receivers last week with Jakeem Grant going off against Baylor. But the light to me is that after that, their receiving core is pretty blah. I think their next top receiver is their tight end. And he has like 300 receiving yards. So really, Kansas State counts on those two receivers. Now, can Baylor shut down those two? Not at all. But it's not like Texas Tech with five weapons. Texas Tech had five weapons at receiver, and Baylor is just spread too thin. I think Baylor will have a little bit easier time covering just two guys as opposed to five. So if there is a silver lining to this matchup, it's that Kansas State's not going to go five wide because they really can't.
Yeah, I would say that this is a more conventional offense that Baylor will be facing than what it faced last week against Tech. I also think, too, this is just, you know, when Kansas State has come to Baylor the last couple of times, especially last year, they've really had trouble stopping Baylor. Even in Baylor's, what was it, the year that Baylor got eligible in 2010 for the first time?
Yeah.
That they were, I think Baylor just won a shootout, something like 48, 45 or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was in the 40s, game. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably part of, and I just think it's a bad matchup for Kansas State overall. Unless Baylor were to, I've repeated this line a lot, but I think Baylor is going to have to help people, in this case Kansas State, in order for Kansas State to pull them off. Kansas State's a very disciplined team, but when you just line them up athlete to athlete, Baylor just owns this game. And if they don't dominate it, it'll be because their penalties at the wrong time, just poor decisions with the offense. If Petty doesn't play and Seth Russell plays and he looks pretty up and down with his performance, I mean, things like that is what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I agree. The more I study Kansas State, the more I think Baylor is better in this matchup. Mm-hmm. But it is concerning when the strength of Kansas State, their passing game, is the weakness of Baylor. So
right.
I guess, you know, talking about that, I've said the matchups are equal, if not in Baylor's favor. I guess, Kevin, where do you think Baylor has the best advantage? You said athletes, but I guess more specifically, where do you think?
I just think, I think Baylor's, you know, Kansas State's pretty good against the run. I think they were top three last time I saw them. But, you know, I think that Baylor, though, is going to have the benefit of the running game, because I just think that Shaq Linwood is having such a quiet, incredible year. Look, he's at 1,135 yards for the year. He's such a dynamic runner. And to me, if he gets 20-plus carries in this game, I think that's a really good thing, because I'm just of the opinion that Shaka, to me, is a better back for Baylor when he has 20 or more carries. I understand what Art's premise is, that he wants to distribute it between Devin Chafin and Shaq and Johnny Jefferson. I get that. I understand it. I just think that when the more I watch Shaq, especially in the Texas and TCU games when Jefferson was dealing with the hamstring and, you know, Chafin was having the quad issue, I just think Shaq kind of is the kind of guy that gets better as the game goes on, and I think that makes a difference in this game.
So, Stephen, if you had to say this has to happen for Baylor to win, what would you say that is?
They got to get their running game going. That's to me, that's the big thing. And what you're talking about, I don't like Chafin being out, but Johnny Jefferson showed me a lot in that Tech game. That last touchdown, that one touchdown that he scored, he got caught, and he was hit by three guys at, like, the 2 or 3 yard line, and he carried those guys into the end zone.
Yeah, that was impressive. Why do you say the running game? I'm curious. What's the reason for that having to get going?
Yeah, well, because they can keep the ball away from the K-State wide receivers. And,
a role reversal then. Baylor keep away, huh?
Yeah, Baylor keep away. And the other thing is, like you guys said earlier, I'm not sold on Petty starting. And you know, the thing is that they really have to have already pretty much made the decision, because Russell can be really good, but if Russell's going to start, he needs to be getting starter snaps now.
Well, I bet he's getting pretty close to it, even if Petty is going. Because, you know, you gotta now go into this game thinking if he got a concussion, he might be susceptible again. So whether Petty's clear or not, I bet Russell's practice time reps have greatly increased.
For the record, Kansas State is technically fourth in the Big 12 in rushing yards allowed per game at 120. They're just a tenth behind TCU, but 120 yards rushing the game in today's offense is pretty good. And the total defense, they're actually leading the conference now. By 341. So, and again, having said all that, I still think that if Baylor's running game really gets going here, we've seen it, guys, where they had a drive against Oklahoma State where they had 11 plays on the drive and 10 of them were running plays, and that drive covered 70 yards. They had 65 of that. I still go back to the game-winning drive against TCU where all those yards that they acquired were on the ground. It's a really good running team. I wish the national narrative, just speaking of people to wake up, I wish the national narrative would be that people would actually watch Baylor's offense true to form, because this is a running team where the pass with the big vertical stuff comes off of what this running game does. I think it's arguably one of the top five running games in the country, and people just look at the vertical stuff and think that's Baylor's offense. It's not.
It's not. I agree. So what's your one thing? Is it also the running game?
I think it's the running game. Look, Kansas State is going to have is going to commit. I think Kansas State's in a real pickle here because I think Bill Snyder was very. I loved what he said in the Big 12 coaches conference call when he said, he goes, they can hit you deep and they do enough to get under chunks. He goes, it really puts a lot of stress on your defense. So I think the question that Kansas State's going to have to answer is, what do they want to commit to try and stopping? If it were me, I would try and put seven to eight on the box consistently to try and shut down. If you get a couple safeties that can and go against Baylor's wide receiving game and just hope that that happens.
I would do what West Virginia does and load the box, and I would blitz as often as possible.
Especially if Seth starts, then I would blitz him even more.
Yeah. I guess if I had to pick an aspect, I'd like to pick defense just because I think if Baylor can slow them down this game, it won't even be close. I don't think it's going to happen. So my key to winning is come out with rhythm early on. Baylor is not very good this year on its first three drives of the game. I did a stat this week. They're scoring on like 40% of those drives, whereas it was like 70, 75% a year ago. I think Baylor needs to start hot. The offense needs to have some rhythm early. If they do, if they can score on two, three of their first four possessions, get out early, then they have a chance to bury a team. If they don't, if they blow chances, then it's going to go down to the fourth quarter, and that's a dangerous spot to be in when you got so much on the line.
Okay, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the national games and some of the Big 12 games, and so we will talk to you after the break.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Kevin, can you tell us who's going to be visiting the Bears this Saturday?
Well, this is the week where they can start doing some official visits, or actually they've been doing official visits all year long, but they've got two in particular, and more will be set up before the end of the week. But the two that we have at this point are Jayon Miles, the defensive back out of Pierce Community College near Los Angeles, that Baylor had offered him back in the summertime, right around somewhere around in August. He's only 5'8", but he's a really good technique player and very fast. And then, ironically, Montrell Wilson, the safety from Keller Fosseridge, who committed in July, decommitted in October, is actually going to come back and take an official visit down there this coming week. And he's also going to probably take officials to Arkansas, TCU, and potentially Illinois. So I think if I were to explain Montrell Wilson's recruiting situation, it would be too long. But it sounds like he just sounds like a very confused young man as to what he wants to do, and I feel bad for him because a lot of recruits are like this too, where they just are unswarmed by this stuff, and it can be overwhelming at times. I get that. Obviously, there's some other kids that they're trying to get down there. I mean, there's some other kids that they would love to try and get down there, but they've got some playoff conflicts. Like, for instance, Richard Moore, the linebacker out of Cedar Hill, on Wednesday decommitted from Texas A&M. I think Baylor would like to try and get him in for an official visit because, remember, he was in for the Kansas game on homecoming on November 1st. I would suspect that they will try and get him in for January. Some other notable guys will be come down there is Jeffrey Okuda, should be coming in there for his game, should be coming in from South Grand Prairie 2017 kid. We'll obviously have a full list in the Blitz this coming Friday, and the Blitz also makes its return this week too. Yeah. But at the same time, we'll have a big list of kids that are coming in. One other thing to let you all know about is the fact that I really think that we're probably looking at about, and I think that they'll probably have about that 13 right now. They'll probably have about five spots max. There's still some things that can change, and then we'll just kind of go from there with that. So about five kids that I would think that they're going to try and target to fill out this class. Probably about 18, but again, that's kind of a moving target number. And again, pay attention, watch for the Blitz this coming week when we have a more detailed list of kids that are going to be coming in for the game. And those will be more of an unofficial.
Yeah. Okay. You got guys visiting on. I know there's a few guys set up to visit January 23rd. Jordan Tolbert's one of them. Mm-hmm. Is Jermichael Hasty visiting that weekend too? I think so too.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
So you know, this is not the last weekend, even though it's the last game. They do visits in January as well. So, all right, Stephen, what do we got on deck for games to pick?
Okay, and you know, I was looking at these games, and it's a pretty good feather in Baylor's cap that they've got College Game Day here when it's Championship Saturday.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of good games on tap this week.
Well, part of it has to do with the fact that Baylor is playing on ESPN Saturday night.
Yeah, that might have something to do with it.
Not all the games are, you know, although some of them are. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, you got these conference championship games, every game is between ranked teams. So, it is, you know, Baylor has been, feel like it's been getting disrespected, but this was a nice tip of the cap to Baylor to come to Waco. So, yeah, let's talk about those games, Stephen.
Okay, we'll start out. We've got number 7, Arizona, at number 2, Oregon. Now, obviously, people rooting for Baylor are hoping for an Arizona win, and Arizona's already beaten Oregon once this year. What are your thoughts on it, Jake?
I don't see it happening twice. I think Oregon is really playing its best football right now. Mm-hmm. When they played Arizona the last time, they were struggling with some injury issues. I think that loss was not too dissimilar from Baylor's at West Virginia, injuries and just, you know, coming off a tough game. So I don't see it happening again. Oregon is peaking right now. And, shoot, if they win very convincingly and Alabama, say, struggles in Missouri, I think there's a good shot at them being the number 1 overall seed.
Yeah, I've had my criticisms of Oregon over the years because the fact that I didn't think that they were physical enough, but this is a really good team, and they really are locked in. This is a better Oregon team than the one that we saw in the past years because they are a little bit more physical in the A gaps. And I do like their chances to couple what you said, Jake, that they're playing their best football. Marcus Mariota, to me, is the prohibitive favorite to win the Heisman Trophy.
He's got it won.
And I think if he plays a pretty solid, he doesn't have to be incredible, but if he plays a solid game Friday night in San Francisco, then he's in good shape. And not only will they be in the playoffs, but he'll also be going to New York to pick up some hardware.
Yeah.
But having said that, don't want to take anything away from Arizona, because there's a weird scenario that Arizona could actually sneak into that 4 if some other things happen. They take care of business and some other dominoes fall in front of them. And credit Rich Rodriguez, who's done a great job out there. I'm sure Michigan would certainly like a do-over how they messed that up.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it unanimous and go for Oregon. And then we have number 1, Alabama, playing number 10, Missouri, and this is a neutral site game, I think, in Georgia. So we've got Missouri has kind of wrecked shop in the SEC East.
Yeah, haven't they?
And so, as much as I would love to see Missouri beat Alabama, and note that this is the only time you're going to hear me say, boy, I want Missouri to win. I'm picking Alabama. I don't like betting against Saban in big games.
I'll go with the Crimson Tide. I mean, I look back at Missouri and they've had a great run. They've won the East. But the thing that still comes back to me is the fact that they got shut out at home by Georgia when Georgia was coming off the week of the Todd Gurley mess.
Yeah.
When he got suspended. And then they also lost at home to a 4-win Indiana team, which just made no sense. Now Gary Pinkel's done a great job with Missouri. He's taken them to the SEC championship game in back-to-back years, and they've been the better addition to the SEC than Texas A&M has. Who thought that was going to happen?
Yeah, no doubt they have, with a lot less fanfare too.
Exactly.
You know, they're not beating their chest. They're actually winning.
No, they're actually doing their job. Yeah, they're more concerned about trying to perform on the field rather than give you a lot of bells and whistles.
Maybe eventually they'll get a helicopter, but they don't have one yet.
The swag. I'm sorry, that's the swag copter. Excuse you, Jake.
I'm sorry.
But nonetheless, I think Missouri's Matty Mock's a fine quarterback. He's done a great job running that offense and keeping things in check. And they've kind of gotten on a roll here the last few weeks. They look pretty sloppy against Arkansas, who was surging at the time, but I still like the Tide.
Yeah, I'm picking Alabama too. Earlier, Stephen, you said Arizona is at Oregon. Obviously, yeah. These are neutral site games.
They're all neutral site
games. This won't be a neutral site. This will be 90% Alabama on Saturday. Almost a home game. Yeah, I'm picking Alabama too. And, you know, a side thing from here, I think you can see Amari Cooper get invited to New York City as well. He's not going to win the Heisman, but he deserves an invite. I mean, his numbers are ridiculous. Over 100 receptions, you know, 1,500 yards. If he has a big game, goes off, I could see that swaying some voters and putting him on their ballots. So
I tweeted that he and Marcus Mariota, in my opinion, were the only two that were deserving to go to New York. Now, obviously, Melvin Gordon crowd up in Wisconsin all riled up about that. But, you know, but that's just how I feel about it.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Next game.
Okay. Then we have the ACC championship game, and that is number 4, Florida State. Playing number 11, Georgia Tech. And, Jake, you always tell me I wait till the last. I got to pick where Baylor gets into the playoffs. So this is one I'm picking for an upset. Georgia Tech's a good team. Florida State, I know they haven't lost since 2012. I know that Jameis Winston can move with his crab legs. But, dude, that is the luckiest undefeated team I have ever seen in my entire life.
Did they win?
They win, but Florida just totally blew that game. And then Boston College just blew that game. And Miami blew their game. You know, those guys have gotten more wins that they never should have got. And at some point in time, it has to even out, and I'm picking it this time. And the committee does not like Florida State anyway. They would love to get them out of this mix.
I think everyone is right that they are right for an upset. I'm not gonna pick it though because they may be lucky, but there's something to that. It hasn't been all luck this year. They've made some late charges to win. And I also think I know this is a difficult offense to prepare for. Georgia Tech runs that triple option, but Florida State struggles have been against passing teams. They're a pretty decent team against the run. They're not going to have to worry about passing maybe but 5 to 10 attempts on Saturday. So I think Florida State wins. If they do win, you know, I think they could jump up to 2. It's not going to happen with 1 the way they've been treated. But I think if they beat a team that's ranked 11th right now, that they will jump back into, you know, 3 or 2. So I'm picking Florida State. Kevin.
I'll go with the Seminoles only because of the fact that, look, you've got a quarterback, as much as a miserable human being as he is off the field, he's a winner. And I never will go against a guy who just finds a way to win games. It's not pretty. I don't care about style points, unlike the committee likes, is in love with style points. Just give me a guy who finds a way to get you more than the other guy, and I'm good with all that. And I do think that Georgia Tech will give Florida State a lot of problems because the running game, I know what you said, Jake, about running the game, but when you're playing an option team it is a different animal because you got the dive, the pitch, and the keeper, that sort of thing. And if you aren't, and you only get a week to prepare for that, and it's really hard to do that in a week's time. You've got to be so disciplined because you can get so many guys that get so frenetically crazed by saying, oh, gosh. You know, and it's interesting too because Danny Cannell, who's a Florida State alum, I really respect. The more I've watched Danny Cannell on ESPN this year, the more I really respect his opinion. He thinks Georgia Tech's going to win the game.
It's not out there. It's not out there. I mean, obviously, Florida State hasn't been just totally impressive, and Georgia Tech's ranked 11th for a reason. That was a good win against Georgia last week, even though if it was. Pretty crazy how it happened. So it could happen. I think short selling Florida State.
Yeah, I just can't go against a guy like I said. Give me Florida State just because Winston is such an X factor. He just wins, and that's what you want.
Well, and you know that's the thing about Florida State is, and I know I said they were lucky, but seriously, those guys got ice water in their veins. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't care what the score is. They're playing right down to the end. But I still say, when you look at that Notre Dame game, when you look at all these wins they've gotten, usually you know, you get lucky in one game like that, and you don't get lucky in the next one. It usually averages out. They flipped the coin like six times this season. It's come up heads every time. Yeah. All right. Now, next we have one that I find really intriguing. This is the old school matchup of 13 Wisconsin playing 5 Ohio State. And Ohio State lost. Man, they're running through quarterbacks, you know. And so where, how far down are they on that? Like third string now?
First string, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, Kevin, you follow the Big Ten more than Jake or I. Your wisdom on it.
You know, Cardale Jones, when he came in against Michigan last week, and again, he had to go on the fly and not think about what he was doing. You know, Ohio State was only protecting, I think, a one-score lead at the time. And, you know, he did a great job running the offense. And I don't know how, obviously, how Urban Meyer splits up the snaps between his teams, between his quarterbacks during any given week. But I also think, too, that I'm kind of the opinion here that Ohio State is not going to really be too concerned about how this goes, because this offense is so designed to benefit whoever's quarterback, whether it was going to be Braxton Miller from last year or in August before he got hurt, or JT Barrett, or what Cardale Jones is doing. Plus the fact they got a pretty good running back in Ezekiel Elliott, who's over 1,100 yards, a pretty solid kid there. And I love Devin Smith. I think he's got just about every all-time record in Ohio State history. I think he's a really good wide receiver. He's a difference maker. I think the question for Wisconsin is going to be, is if Joel Stave, their quarterback, who actually made some nice plays in the passing game against Minnesota last week, if he can do the same, because Ohio State is pretty much going to dare Stave to win this game because they're going to load up on Melvin Gordon, who I think is actually the best running back in college football, even though I said he shouldn't be going to New York. But nonetheless, I think that Stave is going to have to make some plays in the passing game in order to keep Wisconsin in this game and to give them a chance to win it. Wisconsin's got a great program. You know, they've done a great job under Gary Anderson, but I'm going to go with the Buckeyes here, even though they're on their third quarterback of the year. Look, and the other thing is that Wisconsin kind of has gone back and forth too between Tanner McElvoy and Joel Stave this year as well. So it's not like their quarterback situation is rock solid either.
Man, that big twin 10 question really got you going there, Kevin.
I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. For some reason, I'm leaning toward Ohio State as well. I mean, if you tell me any team is in a ranked matchup and playing their third string quarterback, I usually pick against them. But I don't know what it is. Something's telling me that Ohio State will find a way to win. I guess I don't. Wisconsin has some interesting results. You know, they've played some bad teams close, and then they've blown out a couple of pretty good teams too.
Like they should have beat LSU too, by the way, to start the year.
Yeah, they should have beat them. They you know, they won by 5 touchdowns against Nebraska. I mean, then you have games where South Florida, you win 27-10. That's a terrible team. They just, you know, barely beat. They lost to Northwestern, which is not a good team this year. Illinois, you win by 10, and that was at home. So, you know, I they're pretty inconsistent, so it's kind of hard to predict what you're going to get from them. So, I think Ohio State can rally around, you know, this injury, and I think if they win, they'll probably get in the Final Four, and I think they'll get exposed after that, but I do see them winning Saturday.
Okay. Badger, just because that's what needs to happen for Baylor. I wish I could give you a better reason, but
that's all right.
That's my reason. I'm going.
Okay. At least you're honest about that reason, right?
Now, hey, man, I pick with my heart all the time, which explains my results. all right, let's go ahead and get Oklahoma State at 20 Oklahoma, and this is Oklahoma State at Oklahoma. And this is Bedlam, and usually this is a huge game, but not so much this year. I'm going Oklahoma, no commentary.
I'm going Oklahoma. The little bit of commentary that Oklahoma needs to win pretty big. They're not going to have Trevor Knight again. He hasn't played since that late hit. Not late hit, but the hit late in the game against Baylor when he probably shouldn't have been in the game anyway. Yeah. I like Oklahoma because I think Oklahoma State, under Mike Gundy, is a train wreck right now. Mm-hmm. So, Stephen, I am going to pick a result that helps Baylor, and probably for that reason, Oklahoma winning.
Yeah, I'll go with the Sooners. I think Oklahoma State's offense is a mess, and usually when and Samaje Perine will be interesting to see if he can rush for 200 plus in this game.
Okay, and then next we have the other game that could have an effect, and I wish I could find some way, some reason to pick Iowa State, but I see no way Iowa State goes to Frog Nation and pulls it out. I think Patterson's going to be smiling at the end of the night.
Yeah, he is. He is. I mean, TCU's going to win this, and look, they're going to do everything they can to – if they can score 100 points, they're going to go for it. If they're up 50 in the fourth quarter, Trevon Boykin's still going to be in the game. That's just the way he's going to play Saturday. It's going to be very, very ugly. Iowa State gave up 70-something to Baylor last year. They're going to do that again Saturday.
Yeah. TCU, and it won't even be close.
Okay, and then we come back. I'm on Baylor, Kansas State at number 6 Baylor. You know, so much of it depends on whether or not Bryce Petty plays. I'm going to pick Baylor, and I'm picking 45-35. Baylor's pass defense has really scared me the last couple of weeks.
I'll go Baylor 42-24, and I think that that's going to be a case where their running game, they'll give up some plays, but I don't think that I'm not going to confuse Kansas State's passing game with Texas Tech's, and so I think that Baylor should be able to, you know, make some stops when they need to.
What was your prediction score, Kevin? I didn't hear that.
Baylor 42, Kansas State 24.
Yeah, that I can see that happening. I'm closer to what Stephen picked. I wrote down mine at the beginning of the podcast. I have Baylor 44-31. I think Baylor can score more, but I think I'm guilty of devaluing Kansas State's defense. The most points they've allowed all year is 41, and that was at TCU. Mm-hmm. So their numbers don't really pop out, except they just don't get scored on much. So, you know, I originally had more than 44 points, but then I thought, you know, they're better than I give them credit for. And this team under Snyder, man, you never know what to expect. They could beat Baylor. I don't. So 44-31 is my pick. It's going to be close. I really think it is. If it's not, I'll be happy to come back in a week and talk about how great Baylor looked. And they might look great, but I think it's still going to be a very close one.
And Lee Corso puts on the Baylor head, too.
Yeah, so what does he put on? The bruiser head, I guess. The bruiser mask on, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Last question. They always have a guest picker related to a school. You know, who, if you're Baylor, who do you pick? Who would you pick as your
gosh?
Kevin, I'm trying to think of one. You go for it.
I've had a couple of, you know, I thought Michael Johnson or Jeremy Warner, you know, they're famous track athletes. You know, I think those would be all right, but I think
Isaiah Austin.
I think Isaiah Austin would be great. I would like someone though who isn't sports related. Someone who appeals to pop culture. And then I also want someone who's a little bit out there. Bring in Willie Nelson, please. He went to Baylor. Man, that would be just gold on TV if you get Willie. And it would also show that Baylor has a little bit of rougher edge than people might think. So I'd love to see Willie Nelson. My plan B, as far as someone unrelated to sports, is Angela Kinsey. You might not know the name off the top of your head, but anyone who watched The Office, she played the very uptight accountant, also named Angela, ended up marrying Dwight Schrute. I wouldn't mind seeing her on there. People know her face if they don't know her name. So there are a couple options there. Last one, why not bring in W from his ranch? Oh, come on. How cool. A former president. A former president. That's pretty cool.
And they love him, and he's done a coin flip for him already this year.
All right, now I've given y'all time. Now you have to pick someone.
I'm still going Isaiah Austin. Just because the human element story of everything that went on with him, with the Marfan syndrome, where he was not able to play in the NBA, and it would just be too easy for him to do that. I mean, I'm sure they would love to get Griffin, but obviously Robert's got his own issues right now in Washington. So,
yeah.
And obviously he could. The Redskins are, I think, playing on Sunday anyway, so that won't happen. But I'll go with Isaiah.
Man, I don't have any.
All right, Stephen. Here's
okay, Max Singletary.
That's a good one. Here's my wild card.
All right.
They bring in Willie Nelson, and walking in with him is Josh Gordon. I'm pretty sure they have something in common. Some interest.
Oh my gosh! Nice.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Shut it down. Shut it down.
What about Jeff Dunham?
Yeah, that's a good one too. He's a little too.
They challenge us.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, they're playing host to. I think remember Josh is still playing. He's got to go to India. They're playing host to Indianapolis on.
I know. I'm just kidding. I just think. Yeah.
Way to rip the Band-Aid there.
Well, you know, if they really wanted to have some fun, they could have Ken Starr there and have Bill Clinton come in and make the picks.
I want to have Ken Starr there. Here's what I have. I want Ken Starr there, and I want him to wear his running shorts as when he runs out of the Baylor line. So,
yeah.
No, I've seen Ken Starr in his running shorts. That's no.
Pacey White's working there?
No. They have to have him run out like like about 5 minutes before everybody else, so he doesn't get totaled.
Oh, last question. Stephen, will you be at game day?
Will I be at game day? I was thinking I might be at game day. Yeah, I was planning on heading out there and getting a few photos and seeing what was rocking.
I'll see you there.
Okay. All right, and we will see all of you after they make the pick for the college bowl games. We'll do a quick Sikkim Sports special broadcast. And we'll talk to y'all special edition this Sunday after the picks. Next week, guys.
Thank you much.
See you then.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.